The University of Detroit Mercy presents another brand new episode of Ask the Professor. Today's program was recorded using Zoom video conferencing technology.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show in which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my left, it's Professor Mara Livesey.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. How are you doing, Mara?
Doing good. Nice and warm out. A little muggy, but that's all right with me.
We can see that the sun is streaming in just boldly behind you, and it's wonderful. It's been kind of gray for the last 2 days.
Absolutely.
We're glad to have you here. Continuing around the Brady Bunching, it's Professor Stephen Manning on my screen.
Hello, Matt.
Do I see, it's actually difficult because I have poor eyesight. Is that a B or a D on your cap?
A B.
Okay, so that's a Red Sox hat.
Correct.
Yes, okay. I think it's funny, Stephen, you'll appreciate this, because my middle son's favorite player is J.D. Martinez. Mm. We bought him a J.D. Martinez Red Sox jersey a couple years ago. Now, every single time the Major League Baseball online store sends a promotional email, I get a Tigers version of it, and I get a Red Sox version of it. I once purchased one thing.
They know you well.
Yeah, I get ticket stuff for both the Tigers and the Red Sox.
There you go. There you go.
I got something from the Red Sox today offering a Red Sox mask.
Oh, of course.
Oh, right.
You know, proclaim your sports affiliation through masks.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I hope I'm not overstepping here, Heather. My wife went on to, I might have even mentioned it the last time we were recording, she went to Etsy and bought every member of the family a correctly sized mask, very, very nicely, you know, handmade. And most of them have some sort of fabric image on the front that has to do with that person. So my wife and I are talking about this, and we got this letter from the Archbishop this week about starting to go back to mass at the end of the month. And I go, are we going to be able to send our 8-year-old with the like Incredible Hulk mask, like for church, you know what I mean? Like, it's going that way because I need a mask like everywhere I am to make sure I don't forget it. I'm already forgetting it left and right and having to come back home. And
yeah, I don't know. I just don't know how I feel about, are we using it as an opportunity for a fashion statement? I don't know. I mean, I think it's fine for kids, you know, to help them wear their masks, but you know, I
feel guilty then. I'm absolutely guilty for being the fashion plate. I've got a My Little Pony and the Millennium Falcon one. So I got choices.
Nice.
The DIA is also selling them. I was thinking of getting one with the picture on it is the Scream.
That's right.
Well, that would be good.
Well, if it's for a good cause, I mean, if all proceeds go towards combating the virus, I mean.
I figure they'll keep people more than 6 feet away from me when they see me coming with that on my face.
Quite yeah, true.
Or the Red Sox cap will do that too.
Oh,
ouch.
Matt, you should keep your mask in your car or keep one in your car.
You know, Beth, that's my problem. I keep leaving it in that car and then getting in the other one, or we go on a family walk and let's go out for ice cream. Okay, I guess I'm walking back home. You know, it's just like all the time to be wearing it or something.
Matt, if you need one, I've got relatives that are making them. So,
well, there you go.
Let me know.
Olivia can make them too. She's
okay. Yeah. Professor Jim Tubbs is here with us today.
Yes. And I keep masks at home. I keep masks in the car. And when I go for a walk, I fold one and put it in my pocket in case I decide to go in anywhere. So, yes, I understand how hard it is to keep them at hand when you need them.
So a little known fact about me is that I'm just an eensy weensy bit obsessed with chapstick. I have chapstick stored like everywhere. My wife goes, you need to put a mask wherever you have your chapstick, and that's then you're right. Going to be all set. And I'm like, well, that's the plan now, you know.
You would fit right in Arizona. You have to have chapstick everywhere.
Oh, every day, everywhere.
Absolutely. And no better person to teach us about the American Southwest and chapstick than Professor Diane Manica.
Well, hi there, Matt. Good to be here with you.
It's so good to see and hear you again.
Thank you. And speaking of chapstick, I have a little bag of brand new chapsticks for anybody who visits, because most people don't think about it, and you really do need it. I have them everywhere around here.
Is that because you have no water in Arizona?
Yeah, it's so dry. I mean, our humidity today is 17%.
17, wow.
Wow.
And that's high. That's high.
Yeah. It reminds me, the only time, I've never actually been to Arizona, except for maybe the airport, Diane, but in my multiple trips, for whatever reason, to Utah, it's exactly the same. Yeah. If you don't pack chapstick, you're going to pay for it. Yeah. Yep. Professor Dan Maggio is here with us today.
I've learned a lot already. Thank you. Glad I came. Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Hopefully, at least a few things you wanted to know.
Yeah. Yes, I did. I wanted to know all that and more. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the show.
Dan, I can't help but notice the flickering candle behind you.
It is a real candle in front of R2-D2.
Oh, very, very nice.
Looks like it's burning R2-D2 from below.
No, not exactly. It's warm in his bed. I forgot that I had a candle lit in here. So,
well, there you go. Professor Heather Hill is here with us today. How are things?
Good. I just thought of a ATP favorite.
What's that?
A favorite flavor of chapstick. So you can save that for later.
I guess we'll have to hold on to that one.
It's nice to see the weather finally turning, even if it's raining. Good for the plants.
And absolutely.
And the flowers.
Yep, and I've been thinking about you a lot lately because I pretty religiously, almost daily, have been reading Farmer's Almanac, and they had already called for, from this point forward, a very wet spring. And from here to just about the middle of June, it looks like it's going to rain quite a bit, at least once a week, which is good.
Yeah, as long as we get some sun and it's warm and, you know.
Not too warm.
I'll take it.
Now, if I was spying out of the corner of my eye correctly, I think Professor Chow has decided on an official Detroit Mercy professor's mask. Is that what you were showing?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I want to necessarily show that to the president just yet, but anyway. It's, you know, you turn it around, you can also use it for Lions fans too. So
I was just going to say, having grown up in the 70s and the 80s, that is the that's the uniform for going to a Lions
pretty
game.
Much. Sure. So. Anyway, but pleasure to be here, as always.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. And last but most certainly not least, Professor Beth Oljar is here with us today.
Good to be here.
Excellent.
You put a Lions game with a bag over your head? That was the...
Yeah.
Well, so you wanted to say that you could be there, but you were embarrassed to have your face seen at the game.
Okay, got it.
So people would come with them already sort of pre-cut and in their back pocket, just like Jim's pocket mask. And then if the game started turning south, you would put it on and be like, I was here. Funny stuff.
But everybody wore chapstick.
Yeah, well, especially if it was winter. Okay. Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. It's been a while since we had a chapstick-themed question set. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. Reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP. Find us on Facebook or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. We have some questions here. Oh my, these were sent way back in February by our good friend Marilyn Bachorik of the Great White North. And she says, it's snowy and oh so cold here in the Upper Peninsula. We're staying indoors and thinking of questions. Here are a few about TV. They're a bit obscure, so I'm pretty sure we're going to stump you. I'll give you 6 out of 10 for passing, which sounds about
very generous.
Yep. Have fun. Marilyn Bachorik, again, from the Upper Peninsula. And I can't help to get a little too, you know, dramatic, nostalgic about seeing a date of 2/16 on an email and seeing that it was on the other side of a completely different world.
Free plague. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these are about television firsts, television funniests, television's biggest.
Oh.
We'll see where the superlatives take us here. What was the first permanent commercial television network in the United States, launching 15 of August, 1946.
NBC?
You know, that's the trap here, Jim. So NBC was number two. It launched almost exactly a year later.
Oh.
This network does not exist anymore, which is going to be...
Like Dumont or something like that?
That is exactly correct. It was the Dumont Network. Now, how do you...
I don't know.
Never heard of it.
Me neither.
I mean, I would have been sort of way off. Like, I maybe would have said 49 or something like that, maybe even 50 or 51, but 46, that's like incredible. What is the largest broadcast television network in the United States? Don't think too hard.
Comcast?
Mm-mm.
PBS?
PBS, yeah, it's the public broadcasting system. Yep.
I can deal with that.
Pretty much every major metropolitan area and some not so major ones have an affiliate. Okay, here we go. This is more up my alley. In what year did the Nielsen Company develop and begin to use a television rating system? Think about this.
1962.
You know, it was way before that, Stephen.
Would have been with McCarthy around the time of, no?
So what years were McCarthy trials?
52?
54. So you're definitely getting closer. We certainly know it couldn't have been before 15 of August, 1946.
That's true. Right?
It didn't exist. But, you know, you're very, all of you are getting close to the locus here. It says here 1950, they started taking ratings.
Yep. Now, that being said, how many of you guys have ever done one of those things?
I haven't.
I haven't.
Yep. My parents got snagged three times one year.
Didn't sure. they used to actually have boxes that they would yeah. put on people's TVs?
Mm-hmm.
So were those boxes intended for the viewer to go up and like push a button, or were they collecting data?
They keep track of what the TV is watching.
What the TV was watching.
Yeah, see, they sent us these little journals that we were supposed to write down everything we
that
watched.
It was typical to have a diary or a journal that you would write down what you're watching at what hours of the day or night. So you would do that for like a week.
Yeah, that's what we did. I think they paid us like a dollar or something like that back in the day.
Yeah.
Of course, all bets are off going forward in the world of streaming, all the way up to the very top, right? The recent announcement by the Oscars that based on the fact that we're about to have like the first ever non-blockbuster movie summer, all streaming service features will be part of Oscar consideration in 2020. So.
So basically the end of the Oscars as we know
it. Might be the end of the entertainment industry in this
I actually start thinking about it the way that Beth does. Yeah, I'm just like, how if a restaurant has problems coming back, how does a movie house?
And to make a movie or a TV show, you can't require large numbers of people in the same space doing different kinds of tasks. So
Beth, right about now, I mean, I'm working on 3 pilots for people in Hollywood that don't have work.
Interesting.
Wow. So, I mean, I've got directors that are paying me out of their own pocket, which isn't much usually, but because, you know, they're not working right about now. Now's their time for them to work on their pilots and ideas and carry a pitch. Hopefully one of
them might not get a 4th season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is just a terrible possibility to contemplate.
I'm still waiting for 2nd season of Picard.
It's coming.
Yeah, me too.
Oh.
So it says here, the first sitcom broadcast in the United States was called Mary Kay and Johnny. In what year did that sitcom start being broadcast?
Say 56.
No, it's got to be.
I mean, I feel like I got to give it to you. It was 57. It was like.
I'll let you give it to me. Okay.
Invented TV. The next thing that happened in human history was we invented the sitcom. It was deeply scandalous for having shown something on television 1947. Don't think too hard.
A toilet?
Yeah. A lady's ankle.
I'm going to give partial credit to Professor Livesey, but we have to go a little bit deeper.
Was it same bedroom?
Basically,
a single bed.
Mary and Johnny were shown in the same bed as a married couple.
Yeah.
Oh, 40
yep. That's a big deal. Big, big deal. All right. What was the first toy that was advertised on American television circa 1952?
Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah. Good old Mr. Potato Head. Did you have one, Beth?
No, I did not.
I did. But I ate it. Cooked it and ate it.
That was a big wake-up call for me. Okay, basically, child of the late 70s, 80s, we knew the plastic shell that you would stick things in. And I remember, I did not have one, but I remember talking about it. My dad goes, don't you just buy a potato and stick crap into it? And I'm like, yeah, that's the way it used to be.
It used to be that way. The original one, you had to have your own potato.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Poor baby, she doesn't know it. Mm-mm.
Part of the reason is think about how sharp those things were.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Now, there's no way they would let that happen now. So.
Now, that was a set of lips that needed some chapstick.
So on ABC from 1950 to 1953, it's only a few years after TV started, so here's for hope. The Beulah Show was on ABC 1950 to 1953. What was the claim to fame, the first, about the Beulah Show?
Live audience?
Not a live audience.
It had a female lead.
It had a female lead.
African-American female lead?
African-American female lead.
Oh.
Absolutely. Okay. According to the people who keep track of these kinds of things, love questions like that. Love questions like that. So there was a 65-second long studio audience laugh with no break in the middle on what TV show?
Red Skelton.
Not Red Skelton. Good guess, though.
Did you give a year? Was there a year associated with that?
You know, there could be a year, but it's not given, and I don't want to spitball too much here.
Dick Van Dyke Show?
Good guess, but I think it was a little bit before Dick Van Dyke.
I Love Lucy?
I Love Lucy.
Lucy. Was it the Chocolate Factory?
You know, it wasn't that one. It was Lucy Does the Tango. Lucy dances with Ricky with several dozen eggs stuffed into her shirt.
I don't remember seeing that one.
Those were pretty cool questions, Marilyn. Thanks for
those. Yeah, great.
Man, those were and great. I know the show that had the first interracial kiss on it.
Hey, absolutely.
The Star Trek.
The claim to fame of Star Trek, the original series.
All right.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. We had some questions sent to us by someone who wishes to remain anonymous.
Ooh.
And they're kind of mysterious. They're kind of fun. And I think we're going to have some fun going at it. There's quite a number of questions. So we'll do a few now and save a few for our next episode as well. Let's start with this one. In what percent of criminal cases is the insanity defense deployed? So we're doing this numerically.
Pretty low.
12%.
5%.
It's less than 12. It's less than 5.
Oh,
2%.
Two.
Yeah, 1%.
1% is what it says here. One out of every 100. Yep. And to go even deeper into the data, at what level of that 1%, whatever that capital N number is, at what percent is it successful?
1%.
30%.
No, 1/10,000th of it.
Mara said 30%, and you know.
Oh, that's it? Manning, wow.
Mr. Hill, close enough. It's about 25%, about a quarter of the time. So quarter of 1%, Dan.
Does that mean that they're really insane, or they were just able to convince the jury that they were really insane, or the judge?
That's actually really good. That's very insightful, Dan. I just got into an argument.
Thank you. Someone. I was told yesterday I was very insightful. So this is very reinforcing for me.
I was thinking about you yesterday, Beth, because I got into a spirited discussion, not an argument with somebody. The most recent CDC numbers make it very, very clear. The total infection rate for young children, elementary age children, is about 0.05%. And they shoved it in my face and said, open the schools. And I go, you know, last time I checked, my kid needs adults around him to rein him in. Like, just because their infection rate is low doesn't prove that we can just open school.
No. Well, it's not like you drop the kids off and there's no adult supervision, right?
I thought it was highly illogical, but I was amused by it. Let me just.
It is illogical. I mean, yeah.
Let's move on to something probably more fun. Let's see. Since the pandemic, subway ridership in New York City is down X percent.
70%.
A lot is partial credit all the way.
90.
Yeah, 70?
92%.
Really? 90%. That much?
Yeah.
The subway suddenly is not very profitable. They can clean it. Yeah.
Periodically.
Yeah.
They can clean and disinfect it.
Mm-hmm. It's a good time to be a graffiti artist in New York subways. So, did I say that?
That's fine.
Since the pandemic, beans, the sale of beans has skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. Goya's sale of beans and other canned goods like beans are up by what percent?
1,500%.
Oh, whoa.
Oh.
And went to $1 billion. Like,
well, that's like 15 times. So, I don't know. 300%.
It's four times. 400%.
400%.
So, is that also Febreze has also gone up 400% as well? Yeah, Febreze and Arrow.
Probably.
No, Beano. They should sell. No, Beano's up.
Is the question canned goods or damned goods?
You know? That's a good question. Actually.
Same thing, I guess, when it comes to beans.
Let's try this. In 2019, what percent of its budget revenue did Russia receive by taxing the sale of oil and gas?
90%+ easily.
No, because the price of oil went way down.
Yeah.
Beth, what was your
2019? It's the percentage of their what percentage of their income did that
qualify
tax? If they're a giant gas can, so yeah. It has to be 90%+ easily.
Yeah, you know, it's not as high as 90 here, but it's still, I mean, I don't know what I would have guessed, but it's a sizable chunk.
That's their main source of revenue and political leverage in Europe, so. Their gas reserve and oil reserve.
It says here it's 39%, but I still think that's like a giant chunk of the budget. I mean, that's huge. You can't just have that go away and expect to stay afloat, you know? Mm-mm. Let's try one more of these before we close down for one more episode here. President Trump has made 51 appointees to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. How many had ties to the Federalist Society?
100%, all of them.
About 95%.
Yeah, basically, now you're in the wheelhouse here at 84.
I'm trying to pick the judges for McConnell. This is the only thing Mitch McConnell cares about.
Yep.
Getting conservative judges on federal benches where they have lifetime tenures. He does not care about legislating and knocking over Roe, trying to do that.
Right. And I bet they don't wear enough chapstick.
Yeah. The Federalist Society basically provides the list.
Yeah.
Use from.
I was just thinking of the recent gaffe by Senator McConnell with regard to, you know, the last administration did not use the playbook.
Which he is taking back.
He walked it back.
Yeah, he did. He did. He did walk it back.
Well, he might, actually, Amy McGrath, I'm wondering if she might not defeat him. The Air Force pilot who's running, again, the woman who's running against him.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Drew tells me she seems to be polling pretty well, and
yeah,
she's a strong candidate.
Hopefully, they can get rid of Yertle the turtle.
Absolutely.
Let's let Dan redeem himself for the 1,500% thing. One more question.
What? Hey, I didn't come here for redemption.
You're insightful, Dan. You're insightful.
Very insightful. How about by what percent has the daily volume of total Zoom participants increased since COVID-19?
Dan.
So I would say, what do you think, like 1,200%? 12 times? More? 30 times? More. 50 times?
To 100.
100 times? It's even more than that. Well, I mean, how many people used Zoom before? And now everybody's using it.
Everybody. Infinity and beyond.
Like 1,000 times?
So 100 times as much? You know, more than that?
It says here it's 3,000% increase in usage.
Wow.
From 10 million that's 30 times.
Yeah. 300 million users gained.
Wow. Okay.
The entire population of the United States. Yeah, I was about to say 1, 2, 3.
Well, and this is my first time Zooming, so I'm pushing the number.
Hey.
Zoom newbie Zoom.
Zoom newbie.
Right. Just enough time for people to talk about their favorite flavor of chapstick. So, Heather, you're definitely going first.
Oh, cherry.
Cherry. Okay.
Cherry. Yep.
Who else has a favorite flavor of cherry?
I don't have one, so I'm going to go with ice cream and say pistachio.
Vanilla.
Play a different one.
Vanilla.
Mine was kind of an eucalyptus that I bought in South Africa that was really very, very flavorful.
Eucalyptus.
I have very strong feelings that all chapsticks are bad, except for original flavored Carmex.
Oh, Carmex. Yes.
Yeah, little menthol.
I'll even go one step further. I'm old school. I'll still go Vaseline.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Okay, and here's the reason why. As a little kid growing up, on those cold days in the Alberta Prairie, put on your lips, your cheek, your nose, your ears, everything gets covered up with Vaseline.
Yep.
So I'm ready for a second childbirth if I had to. So
I prefer my chapstick unflavored. No flavors.
There you
I'm
go.
With you. I'm with you, Stephen. I am original, you know, the black tube, you know, the original. Somebody who I met when I was getting my PhD in Urbana, Illinois, referred to it as nude chapstick.
Like, exactly. You need to go for something that has many more flavors. I'm sure Diane and Mara and Heather all recall Bonnie Bell's Lip Smackers.
Folks, I'm afraid we've reached the end of our show here, so the time has come to say goodbye, Beth.
Goodbye.
Dave.
See ya.
Heather.
Goodbye.
Dan.
Goodbye.
Diane.
Adios.
Jim.
Arrivederci.
Steven.
I'm told it's the weekend, so have a good weekend, everyone.
Mara.
Goodbye.
And now these words...
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed from all of our basements and living rooms and side rooms and bedrooms today. It's produced and technically directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville. And our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mile.